This is how the Balkans region looked in the early 1990s. Interlinked conflicts, wars of independence and insurgencies known as the Yugoslav Wars resulted in crimes against humanity and genocides being committed. Europe's worst conflict since World War II started in Croatia in 1991 and had spilled over into Bosnia and Herzegovina by 1992. Earlier that year, Bosnia declared independence from Yugoslavia. At the time, it was estimated the newly formed nation had a multi-ethnic population of 4.4 million people. The three main groups were Bosniak Muslims, Serb Orthodox, and Croat Catholics. But ethnic Serbs opposed the breakup from Yugoslavia. With the military support of war criminal Slobodan Milosevic, Serb forces systematically attacked the other ethnic communities, imprisoning many and carrying out mass murder and rape. Over a period of more than 3 years, about 100,000 people were massacred. 80% were Bosnian Muslims. The bloodshed ended in 1995 after a NATO campaign forced Bosnian Serbs to the negotiating table where the Dayton Accords were eventually signed. Part of the agreement was the establishment of the Office of the High Representative to work with the country's people and institutions and the international community to ensure that peace was consolidated. Another outcome of the Accords, an extremely complex system of governance. The country is comprised of the Federation of Bosnia and Herzegovina, with predominantly Bosniaks and Croats, and Republika Srpska, with mostly Serbs, and Brčko, a district divided between the two entities. Bosnia and Herzegovina is led by a presidency consisting of three parts, each representing the main ethnic groups. But how effectively is the nation being governed? And with the general election coming up next year, what are the challenges ahead? These are some of the questions we put forward to the top diplomat off the back of what has been described by the United Nations as the worst political crisis since the war. The High Representative for Bosnia and Herzegovina, Christian Schmidt, talks to Al Jazeera. Mr. Christian Schmidt, the International High Representative to Bosnia and Herzegovina, thank you very much for talking to Al Jazeera.
A pleasure.
I'd like to start by asking you, sir, about the current political situation in the country. It has been described by many senior officials, both in the international community, the United Nations, as well as actually regional figures, as the most dangerous or the deepest crisis that the country has witnessed since the war ended in 1995. What is your assessment of the situation in Bosnia right now?
Yeah, thank you. Indeed, the situation in Bosnia and Herzegovina is in a bad shape these days. I have reported this to the Secretary General of United Nations and to the United Nations Security Council in my report, where I referred especially to the increase of dysfunctionality in the state and inflammatory rhetoric, which probably could go beyond just rhetoric. And this is the concern I have.
That report that you mentioned there, Mr. Schmidt, which was presented to the United Nations Security Council in early November, you had requested to address the Security Council, but that was blocked, or that request was rejected by Russia and China, strong allies of Serbia and obviously of Republika Srpska, that wannabe breakaway enclave, let's say, or at least part of its politicians who want to break away from Bosnia. Why did they reject your request to address the United Nations Security Council?
I would suggest that you ask themselves. If the intention would have been just to bring not my report to public consciousness, obviously this attempt has failed. I never ever have seen that such a report got such a lot of international interest as I had with mine.
Do you think that the rejection or their obstruction to your presentation is further sign of just how dangerous the situation is that you have these world powers that possibly are maneuvering for something that is taking away or dragging us away from a political discourse to something else.
If you accept, and that's, I'm not in the competence just to comment on the intentions of the Russian Federation or other countries, I would not see that this has first and foremost any linkage to Bosnia-Herzegovina or the situation in the entities, especially the Republika Srpska. But this has to be in the context of a broader international crisis and issues which have to be talked about. So to say, I was very happy that I have seen the exchange between the Chinese President Xi and President Biden in just talking about the national crisis. I would encourage all, including President Putin, to contribute to a crisis management. I am not aware, we should all be aware, that if we are doing not, local and regional crisis could occur.
Okay, you've identified two major concerns. One, the dysfunctionality of the state, as you described it, and the other is the dangerous rhetoric. I want to start with the latter, which is the dangerous rhetoric. We have heard the leader of Republika Srpska, that Serb-majority enclave or entity that makes up part of Bosnia-Herzegovina, threaten to withdraw from the army, threaten even to set up his own paramilitary, or essentially militia, from there. How much do you believe that those are actual realistic threats, or are they merely electioneering tactics by this populist leader ahead of next year's elections in the country?
Yeah, thank you. I would agree when you're referring to tactics. I do not see a grand strategy, but tactics can just switch to inevitable development, which could lead to a kind of dissolution. There's the saying of Mr. Dodik requiring a peaceful dissolution, which would, as its own, would be against an anti-Dayton agreement. But some heads of responsible people around in other countries in the region, they are just noting that in their understanding, there is no peaceful dissolution, but there is the danger of getting increasing conflict. I would not talk anyhow about war. I do not see that anybody, and I include Milorad Dodik, to name the leader of this populist Republika Srpska approach, is anyhow to work for war, but the signs he's setting are wrong and could be misunderstood. So I think we should all work and probably.
But sorry to interrupt you here. I don't think there is room for. It's not could be misunderstood. Some of the statements that he has made are very black and white when he talks about Bosnia's Muslim community or the Bosniak community in derogatory ways as converts, when he talks about withdrawing from the army, when he says he will not allow for the state's national army to even be present in land belonging to the country. There's no room for ambiguity there. These are very clear cessationist remarks and threats.
Yes, I share this, but I wanted to underline that I do not see the danger of war, actually. It's on us to prevent any further development. But as somebody coming out of a well-kept middle European education, I'm shocked about the kind of using insulting people and political groups, including a part of the citizens of Bosnia-Herzegovina. This is referring to the Bosniak people about their religion. No, we do not talk about better or worse. We're talking about people. They have denominations, different denominations. They are Catholic, they are Orthodox, or they are Muslim. But this is not any way the place to argue against them or with them. So I'm very strict. There are some competences on my side to make clear that there will be no way of this kind of dissolution, especially on this path you have described.
So one of the threats here and one of the topics that has allowed for inciting language, as you have put it there, obviously has been the threat of dissolution or cessation. Another one has been the topic of the genocide law. There was the law that was introduced by your predecessor, which made it illegal to deny the genocide that has taken place in Bosnia-Herzegovina, particularly, obviously, in Srebrenica, but generally speaking. This is something that Milorad Dodik and his supporters have rejected. The third member of the Presidential Council, the Croat member of the Bosnia-Herzegovina Presidential Council, walked out of an interview because the Serb journalist refused to acknowledge this as a genocide. How much of a sticking point is this? And why is it that it's taking longer than 20 years for Bosnia to come to terms with its past, particularly when much of it is so widely documented? Srebrenica, the massacres that took place, the genocide, is very clear for people to see. Why is this even a talking point?
I would not like to say a good question. I have to say a bad question, but unfortunately a right question. This impresses me as well. How can it be that after 26 years, after Srebrenica, we have to discuss about mourning the victims? I would underline that we have to be prudent and to integrate the mourning in all victims, to all victims of all ethnic groups. And the mayor of Sarajevo, and I could assist, opened the memorial with the names engraved of most Serbian people killed by some part of so-called soldiers. I say it's so-called because of the Bosnia and the BiH army. These are things we have to discuss and to talk. What concerns me is not that we could not find a consent about condemning war criminals, but that the discussion about shows that there has been done no work of just working about it and reflecting it. So this brings sometimes situation here to just looking on the past and forgetting the future, forgetting the current future. This is why I will contribute, and I will encourage, and I have done this already in a speech in the BiH Parliament, just to make a legislation on its own. And there is a responsibility of all, of be it the representing the Serbish ethnic group, the others, the Bosnia group, or the Croat, just to sit and say, okay, what has happened? We will work to make it never happen again. And this is what is lacking so far, I see. And I see and understand my job to contribute to not only the better understanding, but to work on the future. I'm absolutely I'm somewhat disappointed about the way the past has been discussed and is discussed. And as somebody coming from a country, Germany, who has, should I say, a lot of experience with war criminals and war crimes and reconciliation with the neighbors, I know about what I'm speaking. And you can get look to the future together. This is not yet the case in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and this is more complaint that some rejection of the INSCO law, as my predecessor called it.
You make a good comparison there with Germany and obviously its history with regards to war crimes. How much of the failure of Bosnia-Herzegovina in dealing with its past and acknowledging its dark past, how much of that failure is also the responsibility or due to the failure of European countries and partners, particularly when you're looking at, for example, the Netherlands and the role that its peacekeepers played in Srebrenica, the failure by other countries within the European Union to underline and highlight the genocide that has happened there, maybe for fear of it looking back and reflecting badly on them?
I do think this is not the case. Indeed, in the Netherlands, there has been a long process of discussion and self-reflection, but it led to a commitment to contribute to a better development. Basically, conciliation, reconciliation, or work for the future has to be done by the people themselves. There can be assistance. I would just like to refer to South Africa, Bishop Desmond Tutu, whom I had the honor to meet years ago. He was with this commission, the Truth Commissions, trying to find out not only the truth, but to confront everybody with the past, and then on this working on a better development. I think there could be done a lot more in this country, and has to be in responsibility for the younger generation.
There are powers that your office has, which are extremely significant, right? What they're described as the Bonn powers after the talks that took place in Germany in the later part of the 90s. Amongst those, and I want to read them out to our audience, obviously these were powers given to the Office of the High Representative because a couple of years after the peace agreement, what became very clear was that there were still politicians within Bosnia-Herzegovina who were trying to work against the peace. So those powers include, and I'm going to quote here, quoting, is for your office to be able to adopt binding decisions when local parties, i.e. local politicians, seem either unable or unwilling to act. And I believe we saw that come into fruition many times. The most recent, or one of the most recent, was actually with your predecessor's decision to push for the binding decision with regards to genocide denial in the country. However, the next significant power is to remove from office public officials who violate legal commitments or in general, the Dayton Peace Agreement. Why has Milorad Dodik not been removed from office?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I would like just to set clear that these powers are to the High Representative personally, not to the office. Mm-hmm. So it's on me to have and make these decisions. You have described what is possible. All these possibilities are laying in the drawer, and they will be. I know where the key is. I have it. And today, there should be an awareness that every solution which brings internally in the Democratic Republic of Bosnia-Herzegovina, in the state of Bosnia-Herzegovina, situations off is better than drawing out the competences out of the drawer. But I have to say that's on me personally to make decisions, and nobody should think that I have forgotten how I can open this drawer.
Finally, I'd like to ask you about the future. Obviously, we're focused now on the immediate, which is the threats taking place, the current instability, and finding a way out of it. But the reality is, and we've seen this in other countries, for example, there's often a comparison made between Lebanon and Bosnia in the sense that the sectarian divisions that exist there, in the sense that the political system that was established there was established as a consequence of a civil war, and despite it being able to end the war, again, it is not the most functioning political system. The governments change often. In fact, sometimes it takes years to form governments and so forth. With regards to Bosnia-Herzegovina, and I would like you to try and be as honest as possible here. When you speak to people in Bosnia, and I was there and I've spoken to people there, the idea of having this separate entities within a state and different presidents and so forth may appease those who want separation and keep them on the table, but in reality, it is dysfunctional and it is unnatural. What people usually look to in terms of modern states is multi-ethnic states where you have one person, one vote, regardless of religion, regardless of race, regardless of ethnicity and so forth. Why is this not being pursued? What are the obstacles to pursuing this? And do you think that it is time for the international community to be honest with itself and actually realize that trying to maintain the status quo isn't actually going to advance the country, if anything, will keep the threat of war constantly there?
To be honest, as quiet, and I am very open to those I'm meeting also as well in the national community. I think there's starting this one distinction between Lebanon and Bosnia-Herzegovina, not the only one. But the most important is that Bosnia-Herzegovina has an offer and a promise to be probably in due time partner and member of European Union. Well, these issues, as you refer to, will not vanish, but they will be embedded in a broader understanding of a civic society. And we have just learned this in Europe. It's not that easy. You as well, you have in Europe, in Brussels situations, and I know about what I'm speaking because 12 years I have served in the federal government in Germany and had a lot of hours sitting in Brussels at ministerial councils. That's not that easy. This is not about dysfunctionality, but it's on a way to find a solution. So this can be done. And we do not need to change the structure of the state as a whole, but we have to adapt it. So this adaptation would need a look on European integration and stepping back of those assumptions and narratives of some people in Bosnia-Herzegovina that they would be better than others. So looking ahead, this is one state, two entities, three people and the others, but one state is the most important. I think we can do this. We need more than the international community, which is required very easily here in this country, the own work I think there is an opportunity. If you ask who should do this, I don't know whether we all old gray-haired men are those doing this. But the young generation, they are putting themselves in a choice. The one choice is that they are saying, I'm leaving towards Europe because the conditions of life are better there. Or the other is that they contribute and prepare to contribute to a kind of change. This country will not have the same structures fully as 20 years ago, in 40 years or 30 years or 20 years, the next generation. So I'm optimistic that not the international community will prescribe what should be done as a remedy, but the younger generation does it on its own. And we should have a little bit more respect to the younger generation. I'm sometimes upset that such a lot of politicians in Bosnia-Herzegovina, they're talking from the morning to evening, up and down, about why are they not respected or better respected than the other. I hear few talking about the economic situation of the, by the way, well-skilled young generation and the standards of living, the state of law. This is what we have to talk about. And this is a kind of a political dysfunctionality which you cannot just change with the constitution or with any orders of the high representative. This has to be done by the people themselves, and I am counting honestly on the younger generation.
Well, hopefully it will be a brighter future for the country. Mr. Christian Schmidt, the international community's high representative to Bosnia-Herzegovina, thank you very much for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you.